Escuchábamos Cosmic Girl y ya estamos en línea con nuestra invitada internacional que viene, bueno, viene, no, va a estar digitalmente presente en la novena Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, ¿Cómo construir ciudad para todos en estos tiempos? 7, 8 y 9 de julio. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hello, nice to meet you, at least this way, by the phone.
Yes, nice to meet you too.
Jennifer, do you speak some Spanish? Or, I mean, we're going to have the interview in English, just in case I'm asking you if you speak some Spanish.
Sadly, I do not. Very sadly.
Okay, so you can say, maybe you can say hola, and that's it.
Hola, absolutely.
Perfect, don't worry. Jennifer, I'm going to present you in Spanish. I'm going to talk a little bit about you, and then I'm going to start asking you some things, and then you're going to answer me, and I'm going to translate. So I ask you to answer me not very long questions. Maybe you can cut them, and I will try to translate, okay? Okay. Yeah, espero que Jennifer me esté escuchando. You're listening to me, Jennifer, no? No la escucho. Bueno, mientras tanto, si es que se nos cortó, voy a presentar a Jennifer. Jennifer, como les decía, es una de las expositoras en Conferencia Ciudad, Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, que es el 7, el 8 y el 9 de julio, donde el gran tema es cómo construir ciudad para todos en estos tiempos. Jennifer Kismat es planificadora urbana canadiense y encabezó durante varios años el desarrollo de Toronto y asesora en política urbana a ciudades de todo el mundo. Nombrada una de las personas más influyentes en Canadá, Jennifer fue durante 5 años la principal planificadora de la ciudad de Toronto, la Toronto Chiefs, en realidad se dice Toronto, Toronto Chiefs City Planner, donde fue celebrada por su visión de futuro y enfoque colaborativo para la construcción de ciudades. Quiero saber si Jennifer me está escuchando. Jennifer, are you there? Are you listening to me? Vamos a pedirle entonces al estudio que vea lo que pasa, porque yo por lo menos no tengo contacto con Jennifer, y espero que a mí sí me estén escuchando. A esta altura ya no tengo idea cómo están las cosas. Ahí la Francesca me está escribiendo, la productora de este programa. Ah, yo me escucho, perfecto. Entonces yo sigo contando sobre Jennifer mientras retomamos el contacto. Bueno, Jennifer además tiene un podcast súper interesante sobre urbanismo y desarrollo urbano que se llama Invisible City, Ciudad Invisible. Forma parte de la junta asesora del Urban Land Institute de Toronto y es miembro del panel internacional de expertos de la Autoridad de Reurbanización de Singapur. Como socia fundadora de su propia empresa, que se llama The Kismat Group, ha asesorado a decenas de ciudades alrededor del mundo para crear estrategias de desarrollo urbano que promuevan urbes densas, transitables y equitativas. Ahora me dicen que sí. Jennifer, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, we lost the communication, but now we're okay. I'm talking a little bit about you, and I'm almost done with that, so give me just one second. Jennifer, okay. Se postuló el año 2018 como alcaldesa, como mayor de la ciudad de Toronto, por una plataforma muy visionaria. Finalmente no ganó, quedó en el segundo lugar, pero este proyecto de Jennifer incluía abordar la crisis de vivienda construyendo a escala en terrenos públicos e implementando un programa de arriendo con opción de compra. Proponía también un sistema de prevención del delito basado en el vecindario a través del desarrollo de planes de bienestar comunitario. Planeaba rediseñar las calles para priorizar a los usuarios vulnerables, desarrollar 5 centros culturales para promover la renovación fuera del núcleo de la ciudad y la demolición de una antigua autopista para construir una nueva comunidad de viviendas accesibles frente al mar. Esa es un poco la presentación de esta destacada urbanista canadiense. So Jennifer, you're going to be part of the Novena Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, this very interesting conference that we have every year in Chile, where we have been able to listen to people very smart and that have studied a lot about cities, like another Canadian that I know that you know, Brent Tullerian, has been here for this same conference. So I want to ask you first, what will be your conference about? ¿De qué se va a tratar? tu participación en la Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, Jennifer?
Well, I'll be talking about the opportunity to transform our neighborhoods and create communities that are fairer, more resilient, and more compact. And particularly in light of COVID-19, we've learned things during this lockdown. We've learned things during this pandemic that present us with an opportunity to really focus on what a resilient, sustainable, walkable future looks like.
Okay, Jennifer nos dice que, bueno, va a hablar primero de la oportunidad de transformar los barrios en lugares más resilientes y con todo el aprendizaje que nos está significando vivir la pandemia del COVID-19, en términos también de la oportunidad de hacer ciudades más sustentables y resilientes. Okay, please, go ahead, Jennifer.
So the opportunity is right now to think about our cities in a very different way and to think about the opportunities for active transportation, for example, for cycling and walking, how we plan land and planning land in a very different way so that it's possible to do more things in close proximity in our neighborhoods. We have this very unique moment in history, like nothing we've seen before, where we've had to learn a lot of lessons very quickly about how to live in the modern world. And we can take those lessons into our space planning, into our land use planning, into our design. And as a result, we can create places that are better than what we had before.
Dice Jennifer que claramente hay una tremenda oportunidad en estos momentos de pensar distinto, de pensar, por ejemplo, el espacio que le damos a las bicicletas, la manera en que planificamos la ciudad, y repite, insiste que es un momento único, pero que hay que aprender rápido, y es un momento donde podemos cambiar algunas reglas que tienen que ver, por ejemplo, con la planificación del suelo de la ciudad, del transporte de la ciudad. Es un momento muy, muy, muy potente. Thank you, Jennifer. Go ahead if you have more about this question.
Well, one of the things that we've learned in our in the pandemic and that we've always known is fundamental to our city building is the connection between health and well-being and city design. And sometimes that hasn't been much of a priority. We've really prioritized economic development, for example. And one of the things that's become abundantly clear is that the way we would design our cities, good density, that allows people to live in close proximity, but to then also have the amenities that they need for everyday life within walking distance and on public transit, we know that that good density creates societies that are healthier. We have less air pollution. We have more access to nature in our city when we get that design right. So if we start to think about city design through this lens of health as a key priority, it means we invest in public spaces, we invest in green spaces, we invest in active transportation, including public transit. These are some of the types of opportunities that I will be talking about.
Nos dice Jennifer Kismet, urbanista destacadísima en Canadá, y que va a ser una de las protagonistas de la novena Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, que se hace 7, 8 y 9 de julio, es gratuita, no lo había dicho, pero lo voy a decir varias veces, a las 9 de la mañana, que en el fondo estamos aprendiendo muy rápidamente de muchas cosas con respecto a esta crisis sanitaria, a esta pandemia del COVID-19, como por ejemplo la conexión entre la salud y la planificación urbana, cómo la densidad, la buena densidad, nos permite lograr sociedades más justas, la importancia en estos momentos del diseño, del city design, del diseño de la ciudad, la importancia de invertir en el espacio público, en los lugares públicos, en el transporte público. And what you're saying is very related, Jennifer, with this declaration of for resilience in Canadian cities that you just made with more than 100 people and where you were like kind of a leader. Le digo que lo que estamos hablando tiene mucho que ver con una cosa que se publicó en Canadá hace poco, que es la Declaración de Resiliencia 2020 en ciudades canadienses, que fue firmada por más de 100 canadienses conocidos y que insta a los líderes políticos a utilizar la pandemia como una oportunidad. So this pandemic is for one hand terrible, but on the other hand is a real and strong opportunity that we can't lose.
Exactly. That's one of the reasons why we created the 2020 Declaration, because in looking at cities around the world, it has been clear that cities are going, it's almost like there's a fork in the road, and cities are going in one direction or another. They are either becoming afraid of an urban future and afraid of urbanism, or they are embracing urbanism and embracing an urban future. And so the 2020 Declaration is about all the ways that we ought to be embracing an urban future as essential to a more resilient and healthy and inclusive society.
Dice Jennifer, a propósito de esta declaración de resiliencia 2020 en ciudades canadienses, que hoy día las ciudades en el fondo tienen dos formas o están enfrentando de dos maneras las circunstancias, con un miedo a trabajar desde el urbanismo todo lo que nos está sucediendo, o al revés, encarándolo y enfrentando con planificación urbana justamente estos momentos que estamos viviendo. But Toronto and other big cities in Canada and the States and Europe are probably cities very different from some cities in South America. You're going to be talking with people that are going to listen to you in Chile, where we have this gigantic city that is Santiago, and then we have more little cities in the rest of the country, but where we have a lot of problems that probably Toronto solved some decades ago. Entonces le digo a Jennifer que, claro, ella habla y construye mentalmente desde Toronto, y le ha tocado trabajar con otras ciudades desarrolladas que en comparación con Chile probablemente han resuelto ciertos problemas ya hace varias décadas. Is it like that? Have you solved a lot of problems some decades ago, or you're facing other new problems that can maybe relate and give some interesting lessons to a country like Chile and to a big city in Chile like Santiago?
Well, cities and human civilizations are always in a constant state of evolution. And unfortunately, what that kind of means is that you solve one problem and you create another. Problems are emerging. They're constantly emerging. So in my approach to cities, whether it's a big city or whether it's a small city, whether it's the city of Toronto or a city in Latin America, it really goes back to timeless principles of urbanism and timeless principles of design. And those timeless principles are transferable across geographies. They can be made local in specific contexts, and the way they get implemented looks different in different cities across the world, but the principle remains the same. And so what I will be talking about in my presentation is those principles that are transferable from one jurisdiction to another. And the good thing about that is we can learn from one place like Toronto to another, very different culture and very different context. We can learn about that principle. And then it's really a question for local leaders to figure out how that principle is going to apply in the Chilean context.
Okay, dice Jennifer que bueno, las ciudades están siempre evolucionando, y los problemas también. Los problemas se van reinventando. Hay un problema, después hay otro. Pero que en el fondo, Toronto o ciudades latinoamericanas enfrentan problemas que tienen que ver con el urbanismo. Muchas veces problemas similares, y otras veces podemos aprender justamente de las experiencias que han tenido algunas ciudades enfrentando estos problemas de manera anticipada. Así que ella se va a enfocar en mostrar varios de estos ítems y de estos temas que de alguna manera son transversales a distintos tipos de ciudades. It's interesting, Jennifer, because yesterday I was talking with a very important urbanist that we have in Chile. His name is Sergio Beresfield. He's the president of the Urban Development National Council, and they published some days ago something that is called Recommendations for Chilean Cities facing the pandemic. And if I read that, and if I read this document, this declaration of resilience in Canadian cities, there are a lot of points in common. So maybe this pandemic is making a lot of metropolis or big cities in the world face some similar problems, probably coming from different origins, but this need to make more space for bicycles and bike lanes, this need to get cities more affordable, because I heard that Toronto is now the richest city in Canada, and that is a very big problem for a lot of people. So, give me a second. Le digo, Jennifer, que ayer conversando con Sergio Berzfield, el presidente del Consejo Nacional de Desarrollo Urbano, justamente en ese documento que publicó el Consejo Nacional de Desarrollo Urbano llamado Recomendaciones para Ciudades Chilenas frente a la Pandemia, lo que se propone no es muy distinto a lo que se propone en este documento canadiense que se llama Declaración de Resiliencia 2020 en Ciudades Canadienses, y que la pandemia nos está haciendo enfrentar situaciones parecidas a las ciudades en términos de más espacio para las ciclovías y las bicicletas, etcétera. So, please, Jennifer.
Well, I think that goes back to this principle of timeless principles of urbanism and how they are transferable. Our cities are very different, but we face similar challenges across the entire globe. It's really just a matter of degree. All of our cities are challenged to address climate change. All of them are. And the solutions, it turns out, are very similar. The solutions to climate change have to do with compact living, with curbing suburban sprawl, with getting density just right, not too much density, but not too little density. Density just right so that we can live on a smaller environmental footprint, ensuring that we're using forms of transportation that are not reliant on carbon. Reintegrating food production into our cities. All of these are elements that are transferable across cultures. And I'm really thrilled to hear that the 2020 declaration, that it had resonance, because it reinforces that idea that we have very similar challenges, even though they might look different in our cities, and we may be at different points in our urban development.
Dice Jennifer Kismat, esta destacadísima urbanista canadiense que está conversando con nosotros, que va a ser protagonista en la novena Conferencia Internacional de Ciudad, el 7, el 8 y el 9 de julio, que es gratuita y que todos podemos ver, que las ciudades pueden ser diferentes, pero están enfrentando desafíos muy parecidos, especialmente debido a la crisis climática. Las soluciones son bastante parecidas y tienen que ver, por ejemplo, con esto que ella llama el curving and sprawl, o sea, de disminuir, de aplanar la curva de la expansión de la ciudad, de apuntar a una densidad adecuada, de ir eliminando el carbón como principal forma, digamos, de combustión o de consumo energético. Por lo tanto, podemos ser ciudades muy diferentes, pero estamos enfrentando problemas bastante similares. But here, I have a question for you that it's something that is very interesting for me, and you were very close to be the mayor of Toronto. You also work a lot of years as a chief city planner of Toronto. And when you speak about Toronto, you speak about a city, a 6.2 million inhabitant city with one major. Yeah, correct?
It's a city of 2.9 million with one mayor. The region is larger and divided up into other municipalities, so it's a population of 2.9 million with one mayor, and there was, when I was chief planner, I was chief planner of that area with 2.9 million.
Okay, now I understand better. So this 2.9 million inhabitants are have a leadership of one mayor. Yeah, yo le estaba diciendo, Jennifer.
Yes.
En el fondo, Toronto es una ciudad, claro, el Gran Toronto tiene 6 millones de habitantes, pero el Toronto urbano tiene casi 3 millones y tiene un alcalde. But here in Chile, and particularly in Santiago, we have this strange phenomena. Santiago is a very big city with more than 7 million inhabitants, and the urban city has almost probably 5.5 million, and we have 52 districts we say comuna in Spanish, and every district, every comuna has a mayor, and we don't have a metropolitan authority. How do you think a city can be successful having 7 million inhabitants, having 52 districts, having one mayor for each district, and doesn't have and didn't and not having, sorry, one metropolitan authority?
I think it's very tricky. I think it's very tricky because there are some things that need to be considered at that larger scale. If you think about transportation networks as an example, surely the residents of Santiago are constantly crossing and crisscrossing in and out of different political jurisdictions. And so having consistency in the service delivery is absolutely critical. Some things, like local neighborhood planning, is best done on a very, very local scale. But then there are other services that are better provided on a regional scale. And I think getting those services divided up to be delivered at the right scale is absolutely critical to good governance.
Yeah, absolutely. Dice Jennifer, es definitivamente tricky. O sea, difícil. Tener una ciudad como Santiago con 7 millones de habitantes, 52 comunas y sin una autoridad metropolitana. Porque claro, hay temas que se pueden resolver de manera local, pero hay grandes temas como el transporte que necesitan decisiones de escala real. Nosotros en Chile más encima tenemos las decisiones de transporte a nivel nacional. So I was saying that, talking about transportation, we have a national authority for transportation. Not even the majors can solve these kind of problems. And we have one person for all the country with his team to solve our problems of transportation. So that is one of the big problems. The other problem is garbage. The other problem is these parts of the city where you have the limits between the two districts. So it's not interesting for no one of the two districts. So there's a lot of problems that we can solve. And probably the most important one is coordination. Le digo a Jennifer que nosotros tenemos el problema del transporte, que se decía a nivel nacional, tenemos el problema de la basura, que no tiene una mirada de ciudad, tenemos el problema de las zonas límites de las comunas donde a nadie le importa lo que pasa. So, do you think a city, have you seen a successful city in the world without a metropolitan authority?
Well, I think there's different models, but at the very least, there are services that must be coordinated around those smaller jurisdictional boundaries. When we changed our model and created more of this regional model, there was a tremendous amount of protest because local communities were worried that they were losing control over local planning decisions. And that has been true to a certain extent. But on the other hand, there are other services, and you've mentioned many of them, transportation, garbage collection, some of the strategic planning, public transit. Those things are better delivered at a larger scale because of the ways that we move through and we use the infrastructure of a city. So I would argue that you actually need both scales, and if you're missing that regional scale, then you're going to have very costly service delivery, but it's also going to be disjointed, and it's going to be difficult to create larger changes.
When did you make that change in Canada, or at least in Toronto?
In 1997. So,
23
years ago.
Yeah. Me dice Jennifer que ellas hicieron este cambio en el fondo de tener una autoridad metropolitana en Toronto en 1997, hace 23 años. Y que obviamente en un principio las autoridades locales, es decir, en este caso serían los alcaldes o los municipios específicos, se quejaban de que les estaban quitando poder, ¿no es cierto? Y se lo estaban dando a una autoridad que estaba sobre ellos. Obviamente, aquí también eso va a pasar en el momento en que tengamos gobernadores o el día que tengamos alguna autoridad metropolitana. Dice Jennifer que claramente hay que tener estas dos escalas. Hay que tener las autoridades locales y hay que tener las autoridades metropolitanas. Pero hay temas, justamente ella lo dice, como el transporte, como la basura, que no pueden depender de una autoridad específica, sino que tienen que tener una mirada mayor. Talking about another interesting thing that you talk a lot about in your Twitter, in your different speeches, you are an advocate of density and walkability. You use a lot this hashtag called Cities for People. So can you tell us a little bit? I mean, I'm also a fan of that, but probably it's interesting to hear for somebody that's a real professional about cities, why is so important to be an advocate of density and walkability? Le pregunto a Jennifer, le digo que ella es una gran defensora de la densidad de las ciudades, de que sean caminables, and also bikes and bike lanes, y también las bicicletas y las ciclovías. Y le pregunto por qué es tan importante, además, en estos momentos, justamente ser un defensor, un promotor de estos conceptos, Jennifer.
There's a whole variety of reasons, but at a very basic level, we've bought into a myth in our urban development, and a lot of it has been driven by planning our cities around cars, that we can spread things out and have a very long commute, and at the same time have a high quality of life. And my argument for cities and many other urbanists is that we need to bring uses in close. We need to bring them in very close. And we need to provide the opportunity to do more things through walking and cycling in close proximity of where we live. And when we make that a real choice, what ends up happening is that we lower our environmental impact, because walking and cycling have very, very low impact on the environment. But it also means we need more density, because we need things to be closer together. The distances cannot be as spread out as they are in an auto-oriented city. So this shift is a shift back to a higher quality of life, because you can walk and cycle, but it's also a shift to a more sustainable and a more resilient city that I would argue is also more equitable, because the cost of transportation is so burdensome in cities that have a long commute.
Definitely. Dice que, Jennifer, que el diseño que se ha hecho en las ciudades para los autos ha transformado eso en un gran desastre en la mayoría de las ciudades del mundo, que es fundamental apuntar a la proximidad, esa proximidad que da la densidad, porque eso genera un menor daño ambiental, que es fundamental hacer este cambio para mejorar nuestra calidad de vida, disminuyendo todos los costos que significa el transporte cuando ir de un lugar a otro, el commuting, como se dice en inglés, te exige estar una hora y media, dos horas arriba del transporte público. You were, the other day, you made a retweet of Janet Sadiq Khan, the former New York City Transportation Commissioner, where she was interviewed by Wired magazine, and she was talking about that if we can make it easier for people to get around without having to own a car and paying to operate, maintain, and park it, that's money that can be used for healthcare, for education, for housing. I think that's a very interesting way of thinking. Le digo a Jennifer, que ella el otro día retuiteó una entrevista que le hicieron a Janet Sadiq Khan en la revista Wired, donde entre otras cosas decía, esta ex encargada de transporte de Nueva York, y que fue parte también de Conferencia Ciudad, olvídense los fans que tenía, decía que si podemos hacer más fácil para la gente moverse por la ciudad sin necesitar un auto y sin tener que pagar por mantenerlo y estacionarlo, esa plata se puede usar para la salud, para la educación, para que haya más casas. So that change in how we invest money in a city is so important when we think about replacing the importance of cars in front of the importance of walkability, bike lanes, etc.
Well, in part it's so important because we often talk about the cost of housing and how expensive housing is. But we often forget that the overall household costs when you have a long commute are driven up astronomically. And so we really need to be looking at household costs. It might be that living in a more urban environment where the cost of housing is slightly higher, but the cost of transportation is lower because it's possible to walk and cycle, is actually a better way to design a city than to assume that putting housing on the outskirts on cheap land with lower costs is a good way to design a city. It's not, in part because your environmental costs go up, the social costs go up, the costs of commuting go up, and the overall household costs are often real burden because of the cost of the long commute. So really taking into account how we move about in our everyday life is the foundation of ensuring that we are creating cities that are sustainable, but also affordable. So it's not just about housing, it's about housing and movement at the same time.
Bueno, entre las cosas que dijo Jennifer, en el fondo dice que, claro, la densidad, una ciudad más densa y más caminable, es mucho más óptima en términos económicos, es una mucha mejor inversión pública que una ciudad que apuesta por esta extensión, por construir en los suburbios, y especialmente cuando se trata de suburbios que en el fondo dependen completamente del auto para poder realizar cualquier cosa. You were talking in your very interesting podcast, Invisible City, with Brent Toderian about suburbs, and it was interesting the way you were making a definition of what kind of suburbs are the ones that are dangerous or bad for the cities. Maybe you can explain us a little bit about that. Le digo que tenía una muy interesante conversación en su podcast, que se llama Invisible City, con Brent Toderian, un urbanista que también estuvo en Conferencia Ciudad hace algunos años, y hablaban sobre los suburbios, pero hicieron una muy buena definición para entender cuáles eran los suburbios que le hacían mal a la ciudad, cuáles no, para no generalizar. So we should not generalize when we talk about suburbs. We have to identify which suburbs are bad for cities, no?
Exactly. And that work we were referencing comes from some research that was done in Canada that looked at different types of suburbs and classified those suburbs as either auto-oriented suburbs or transit-oriented suburbs or second wave or first wave suburbs. And what's so or walkable suburbs? And what's so critical about those classifications is that, of course, not all suburbs are created equal. And we can adapt suburbs. We can change them by adding transit, by adding gentle density, by adding new uses. We can change suburbs that are primarily oriented towards moving around in a car to being places that are oriented around community and oriented around being able to do things within walking distance of home. But first you have to begin in kind of figuring out what is the design of this suburb, what is the implication of the design of this suburb, and how can we then begin to transition this suburb to become a more sustainable and more livable and more equitable place.
Jennifer dice que, claro, hay que distinguir los suburbios que implican una dependencia absoluta del auto y por lo tanto van agrandando la mancha de la ciudad y hacen que todos esos costos muchas veces tengamos que pagarlos el resto de los ciudadanos. Respecto de suburbios donde están más orientados a que sí puede haber distancias caminables respecto de los servicios que están en la proximidad y que se pueden adaptar muchas veces los suburbios para hacerlos más caminables y más sustentables respecto de la ciudad. But do you think COVID-19, this pandemic, is going to make inevitably more people to buy their houses in suburbs? Si le pregunto si cree que la pandemia va a hacer que más personas se compren casas en los suburbios, justamente alejándose de la densidad. Jennifer.
Well, the challenge with city building is that everything we do is a choice, and we sometimes think that things happen by accident or they happen by default. But nothing happens by accident. Nothing happens by default. Every single thing that happens in our city is a choice, and that choice is informed by values, and in the best case scenario, it is informed by data and informed by analysis. And so one of the reasons for the 2020 declaration was we really wanted to say, let's make the right choices moving forward in our cities, recognizing that there's an incredible risk that we'll use values that are not, you know, recognizing climate change or recognizing the importance of promoting inclusion in our cities or resilience in our cities. So I would say, you know, what happens here from COVID-19 is completely up in the air. It's up to us. It's a choice that we make. And that's why these conversations that we're having right now straight across the globe are so critical.
Dice Jennifer que nada pasa en la ciudad por accidente. De hecho, you have a very interesting reflection that I heard in your TED Talk. You said the city isn't something that happens to you. You make choices every day that shape and make your city. Ella decía en una charla TED que la ciudad no es algo que te pasa. Tú tomas decisiones cada día que hacen que la ciudad se diseñe y se haga de alguna manera. Entonces ella dice, nada pasa en la ciudad por accidente. Es una elección. Tomemos las decisiones correctas. Si yo el día de mañana, producto del COVID, voy a seguir, digamos, alargando la mancha de la ciudad, voy a hacer que en el fondo el resto de los ciudadanos tengan que subsidiar que yo viva en la cresta de la loma y donde no hay ningún tipo de servicio y tengo que usar el auto durante horas para cualquier cosa, voy a estar tomando una decisión que va a afectarme a mí, pero también a mi planeta. Jennifer, thank you very much for this conversation. I don't want to take more of your time, so thank you very much. And we're going to expect to have. I'm going to be your host also on July, so we will talk again. But thank you very much for this conversation today.
Well, many, many thanks. It was my pleasure.
A big hug from Santiago de Chile, and hope to listen to you and watch you through the computers and through the mobiles in some more days. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.